This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with the chair of the Louisiana Republican Party, Roger Villery. Much to talk about with him, including Vance McAllister apparently getting back in the race to retain his U.S. House seat that he said he would not seek re-election for. Also, Steve Scalise moving to the number three post in the Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. And oh, by the way, this is an election year, with Republicans trying to unseat the lone remaining statewide elected Democrat, Mary Landrieu. Also on the show, Bill Dennehy, one of the most colorful major league pitchers ever. He only won one game in the majors, but he made his mark. He'll talk about his remarkable career and the cortisone that caused him problems after he quit pitching. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. InksterShow@WRKF.org online. We begin the week with Roger Villery Jr., the chair of the Louisiana Republican Party for the last decade, businessman from Metairie, and a man who is at the forefront of what's happening in Louisiana politics. His party controls all but one of the statewide elected offices in Louisiana, the lone exception being U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu, and the Republicans are gunning for her big time come November. Good morning, Roger Villery.
Well, good morning, Jim. It's glad to be on your show.
Good to talk with you. 10 years, and during that 10 years, the Republican Party has had enormous success. The GOP owes it all to you. Isn't that right?
Well, no, I don't think it owes it all to me. I think we just had some great candidates. We've had the people of Louisiana have made some good decisions, we feel, in people they have elected. And I think that the elections have gone real well. The Republicans have done a good job in office. And I think that the constituents are comfortable electing Republicans up and down the ballot.
Well, one great success story from a man you know well from right in your backyard, Steve Scalise, only 6 years in the U.S. House of Representatives and the former state House member, has become the number three person in the entire United States House with the Republican majority. Quite an accomplishment for Congressman Scalise.
Well, I think the whole state needs to be proud of Steve for the job he's done. He's someone that had a great reputation when he was in the state house. He's someone that has done a good job in Congress. He's reached out to both sides. He's someone that is not hyper-partisan. He gets along with all constituencies. And he's done really an excellent job. Yet he has the conservative values I think that Louisiana appreciates. And that is really the highest elected Republican that we've ever had from the state of Louisiana. So we're really proud of him and his accomplishments in such a short period of time.
Well, that is true. He's higher than Bob Livingston was.
That's correct. Yeah, Bob was set to be Speaker, but did not make it.
297-5633, if you'd like to talk to Roger Villery Jr., graduate of Archbishop Rummel in the greater New Orleans area. And for 10 years, he has orchestrated unprecedented success for the GOP in Louisiana. Well, if you're not the cause...
Oh, by the way, Steve Scalise, Archbishop Rummel graduate also.
I know that. So the Rummel Raiders, right?
Rummel Raiders, yeah.
You got to be proud of...
You know what's really interesting about that first congressional district we've had? You think about the people that have gone through that. Bob Livingston, who was head of appropriations and almost became Speaker. We've had Bobby Jindal, who went on to become governor. We had Senator David Dinner, went on to become a U.S. senator. That's a seat that's had some tremendous leadership through that first congressional district seat.
The last four occupants have been in order: Livingston, Vitter, Jindal, and Scalise. So, yeah, I don't know of another congressional district in America that has packed the wallop that one has.
We don't think so. We think it's a tremendous testament to that congressional district and leadership it's produced.
All right. Well, in the 5th District today, and I am told by someone very close to Vance McAllister, and he all but announced his candidacy on this program a few weeks ago, that he is announcing for sure he's in. He's running for re-election. Are you happy about that?
Well, we really had suggested that the congressman go ahead and resign and move on with himself, so I'm not particularly excited about that situation. No.
He could win, though.
Oh, sure. He could win.
And he essentially beat the Republican of choice among the party leaders. I think most party leaders backed Senator Reiser the first go-around. How did he do that?
Well, I think he did that by having a message that it was a crowded field. He got his message out. He spent a lot of money at the right time. He had a good organization. And then he reached out in the runoff or the general election, reached across the aisle and developed associations that were able to get him elected. So, I think he ran a good campaign things aligned for him to get elected, but it's, he ran on issues that, I personally feel like that he didn't live up to, that's my personal feeling.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that he failed from a moral standpoint, but we of course have been down that road before with other people, including David Vitter. Now, forgiveness and redemption, we're pretty good at that in Louisiana.
Well, we all should forgive, and we all should have it in our heart to look at individuals, and we're all human. We all make mistakes, and we're on this earth a short period of time throughout history, and hopefully we're able to learn from our mistakes and move on. So.
Well. And Vance McAllister, on this program a few weeks ago, he acknowledged that he and the senator were in contact, the senator being Senator Vitter, in contact quite a lot, and that they had prayed together. And apparently it was Senator Vitter's encouragement that has been the wind beneath the wings of Congressman Vance McAllister.
Wow, I did not know that. That's something new. I didn't know that the senator had encouraged him to run for re-election.
Well, I don't know that he just said he was standing by him and he understood he'd been there and that he was praying for him. And and I'm taking Congressman Kent McAllister at his word. I have not talked to the senator about this, but he said that he and the senator were in contact. And if that's the case, then hats off to David Vitter. If anybody knows what it's like to be embroiled in a controversy of this kind, it's Senator Vitter. But will you run anybody or seek anybody of prominence to run against Congressman McAllister?
We would not do that. But there are a number of people who have already announced that they're planning to run or look at that position. And, from our standpoint at this time, the party hasn't made any decision on what we were going to do and what position we would take in that
right.
seat. There's a number of people who have expressed interest in it. There's a number of people who have said they are running, and we're just going to wait and see what happens.
Well, your party has become somewhat like the Democrats used to be. It's become so big, so powerful in this state that there are factions within the GOP. You would acknowledge that.
Oh, absolutely. But that's a good thing because we don't move in lockstep. We're a large party, we're diverse, and I think that that's important. And we come together and make decisions as a group, but we don't just move in solid lockstep. And I think you need diverse people. You need people from all backgrounds. You need multiple ideas. And I think that that's a good thing.
297-5633, your number for State Chair Roger Villery, 10 years in office as the chairman of the Republican Party, a businessman, a florist from Metairie, and a guy who has been in the political realm himself as a candidate. He got in the arena a few times, ran for lieutenant governor a few years ago. And many may not realize it, but you were on that ballot in 1989 with David Duke and John Treen. You ran for that House seat at that time, didn't you?
I did. I was in that race.
What kind of an experience was that with all the national furor that came over Duke being a prominent politico in Louisiana?
That was quite an experience. It really was. They had a lot of negativity. It was, I know our family personally was harassed and attacked. Our business was shot up. We had...
It was shot up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You mean like gunshot?
People wanted me to get out the race. So, yeah, yeah, with guns. Yeah, they shot up my business. One of my brothers was beaten up. It was pretty bad. It was not the type of race you really wanted to be in.
Well, who did it?
Well... Who did it? Who knows?
Well, there were other people in the race, obviously, the most notable being Mr. Duke, but could it have been Duke or somebody affiliated with him?
That's so long ago. You're talking about it.
Okay.
I don't know. They never found anyone, and nothing came of it. It just was a race that was, it was a tough race. It was a hard race, and... it was quite something I've never been involved with before or since in my life. So.
Well, for that's a point to be made. That was 25 years ago. But for people who believe that Louisiana politics is rough and tumble now, we've been there before, haven't we?
It was pretty rough and tumble. It was like the Wild West.
Well, Saturday night, and I'm responding to a listener's inquiry, 9 people injured on Bourbon Street, early yesterday morning, a terrible incident, certainly not good for tourism for our state's crown jewel city. The mayor is, of course, swung into action, as you would imagine he would, but I don't hear any public officials from a statewide level opining about this. The governor never talks about crime. Should he?
Well, I think crime in the city of New Orleans is, if not the number one problem, because maybe education is number one, but crime is surely number two. I think it's something we have to look at and get hold of in that city. I think it's something that they need to put all their resources and redirect, because without a safe city, it's... Tourism is our number one industry in that city, and we need to protect it.
You live in Jefferson Parish. Do you go into New Orleans for, I know you go in for meetings, but do you go in for entertainment? Do you frequent the restaurants and the shops in the French Quarter, Roger?
We go in almost every single day. I live very close to the Orleans Parish line. We're there on a regular basis, every day in the parish. We regularly go to meetings. We go out to eat. We go to the movies, to the opera, to the theater. New Orleans is the hub for this area, and it has to be a safe place.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. Have you been to the Sanger since it reopened?
I have. It's absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I see that Frankie Valli is coming there.
Yes.
80-year-old crooner coming to the Sanger, and I hear he can still do it. He can still hit those notes.
That's what they tell him. They said he is fantastic. I'm not going to better make that one, but we really enjoy.
You'll be there for Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young in August.
There you go.
There you go. Okay, we'll return with Roger Villery, the chair of the Louisiana Republican Party, and go to the phone lines, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. Back after this 90-second timeout on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, and we will go to the phone lines in short order with Roger Villery, the chair of the Louisiana Republican Party. I did have a release here that came within the last few minutes. Greater New Orleans Republicans endorse Bill Cassidy. The Greater New Orleans Republicans speak for the entire GOP in the state?
They speak for the Greater New Orleans Republicans. It's an organization made up of a number of young Republicans in the Greater New Orleans area. But the Jefferson Parish Republican Executive Committee has endorsed Bill Cassidy, and then the St. Tammany Parish Executive Committee has endorsed Bill Cassidy, and I know the Rapides Parish and the state party has endorsed Bill Cassidy. So no one individual group speaks for the whole Republican Party, but a number of key organizations like the Central Committee and a number of executive committees have taken positions in that race.
Do you have a preference? Do you like somebody in that race?
Well, I support the decision of our executive committee, and the executive committee has endorsed Bill Cassidy.
Okay. Would you encourage Rob Manus and Paul Hollis not to run?
Well, you know, this is America, and people have a right to run, and I think that that's their right to stay in a race if they would like to do that. All right, I would encourage them to, look at their campaigns and make the decision that's best for them and for the state of Louisiana and for the United States. And I think, the best thing for the country is to have a new senator. I believe that it's time for, to retire Mary, let her come home. I think that her support of Harry Reid is unprecedented, and I don't think he supports generally what the people of Louisiana want. And he's definitely not for ideas and for helping out the state and the things we need as far as energy and issues like that where we could really use the help.
Okay.
He has protected our borders. He hasn't done things that generally the people in Louisiana really want. So I think that, something that they need to look at and make a decision on their own.
John in Livingston. John, good morning. You're on the air with Roger Villery.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a lifelong registered independent, and I frequently wonder why the Republican Party doesn't do anything more to court us as independents. It seems like whenever I get anything in the mail from a Republican candidate or from the Republican Party, it always seems to be an assumption that I'm already a Republican or I'm already a hyper-conservative, and I kind of resent that.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what things you get in the mail and what you do, but we like to think we represent the basic values of all Louisianians. I mean, nobody's going to agree on every single issue every time, but we don't assume that anyone is automatically with us. We think we have to earn every day by our actions the respect of registered Republicans as well as independents and Libertarians, Democrats, we really represent the values and the people of Louisiana. Well, we do not take you for granted.
Yeah, maybe it's just the area we live in, that I'm in Livingston Parish, and yeah. To try to have any type of civil dialogue with anyone that doesn't espouse conservative, hyper-conservative values, and I say hyper-conservative, I think that's pretty accurate in Livingston Parish that it's very difficult. Now, I don't know where all the Democrats are. You can never find a Democrat to have any discussion with. They're all kind of hiding from everyone. And what few people are independents, I think independents like me, I'm so tired of trying to find a Republican or a hyper-conservative to have some discussion with that I've basically given up over the years.
All right.
Oh, goodness. Well, we don't want you to give up. It, you know, the politics affect everything we do in life. Everything, all decisions that are made are affected by our laws and our elected officials. Whether it's building new roads or our health care or the taxes, how they're invested, how they're used, our safety, everything affects on how people make decisions, and whether it's good decisions or bad decisions or no decisions at all. So I think that, you shouldn't give up on it, but, I just don't know exactly what you're talking about as far as, individuals and mailings and things. There's so many different groups, so many parts of the Republican Party. If there's not one, everybody just doesn't stand in line and say, this is what we're going to do today, and this is what we think, and everybody's going to think the same way. You know, we have many, many varied pieces to our party, and I think that's a good thing.
All right. Robert Miller, a fellow florist, he says, with a policy question, he says, I recently was asked to provide floral arrangements for a wedding for two men. I later found out that one of the men was a practicing Muslim. Question from Robert Miller, does the Republican Party believe I have a right to refuse their business?
Well, as far as the Republican Party, I think as an American, if you are in business and you're in your own business, you should have basic decisions on who you want to work for and what you would like to do within a reasonable arena. I think that I'm in business to service customers, so we feel like when a customer calls us, I don't ask them what is their religion. I don't ask what their background or what their sexual preference is. We try and take care of customers that need floral products. So I don't know how he runs his floral business, and to ask someone whether they're Muslim or whether they're a Christian or whether they're Jewish or whether they're a Hindu, we never get into that. So I don't even know how he would
do that. Have you ever turned any business away, Roger, in all your years as a florist?
Oh, of course. I've turned away business because of we've had customers that were abusive, that for whatever reason didn't pay their bills on time. You know, there's multiple reasons. But
not on the basis.
We've never turned one away because of their religion.
All right.
We've turned away because we can't do the work because we're too busy. If you if you have two or three weddings, you might not better take a fourth wedding. But we've never, like I said, we don't even ask someone.
What here's a story that's broken in the last few minutes from the Associated Press. The U.S. Supreme Court says employers with religious objections can refuse to pay for contraception. That was before the High Court, and the High Court has ruled against the Obama administration on this. What do you think?
Well, I think that if that's their core religious belief, and they believe that that morally impairs them in their beliefs, then I think that the Supreme Court made the right decision.
297-5633 for Roger Francis Villery, Jr., Kirsten on Government Street. Good morning. You're on the air with Roger Villery.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Mr. Chair. I applaud you for your tolerance in saying that you would serve any customers that came your way. I have a question about what you made of Senator Vitter's appearance at the press club. And do you agree, and do you think Louisiana Republicans across the state will agree with Vitter's seeming resignation to accepting the billions of dollars of federal government dollars to expand access to affordable health care?
I did not hear that, and I'm not aware of exactly what he said on that. So not knowing the details, I can't really.
Well, he said he was open and everything was on the table. That's a quote from the senator, and meaning that he might accept. I don't know that he said he would accept. He said he might accept the Medicaid money. Would you encourage him to do so or not to do so?
personally, I don't think we should accept the Medicaid money. I think I don't think we should be doing Obamacare. I think we should roll it back. I don't think in the long run the state or the federal government's going to be able to afford that. I don't think the country can afford what's getting ready to happen. The cost is going to be astronomical to the country, and I don't think people realize the tremendous amount of money and resources it's going to take to make this thing viable.
Now, Governor Jindal gave a speech a week or so ago in which he said America was being threatened with its religious liberty by the current president. And a question from Delia about fundamentalist Christian Republicans, as Delia puts it, are they using government power to impose their personal religious belief on other people?
No. No, I don't think they are at all. I think that they have a right to practice their religion, but they do not have the right to push their religion on anyone else. And in America, we have the basic freedom of religion. And I think that's one of the basic principles we were founded on, because in Europe there was religious persecution going on at the time that we founded our country. And that's one of the basic principles we wanted, the right to have our own religions and practice our own religions without being persecuted. And so I think that's what we need to be very careful not to do that.
All right.
Not to persecute people.
297-5633 or inkstershow@wrkf.org. And here's a question from Billy Gibson. And I used to hear Republicans say the same thing. Billy writes, is it healthy to have one party dominate politics in a state? If Democrats or Libertarians held every congressional seat, would it be the best solution for our state? Now that you have almost everything, Roger, you're trying to get it all with Mary Landrieu. You're trying to beat her this fall. In the words of Billy Nungesser Sr., is that fair pool?
Well, we think so. We think that basic philosophy of the Republican Party is a better philosophy for the state of Louisiana. Again, we're not monolithic. We don't just walk. It's not just one Republican thought. It's multiple thoughts. It's a large party with diverse people from diverse backgrounds and diverse ideas, but we have general core principles. And I think that you can see that with the legislature and the governor and the different elected officials, or the congressmen and the senators. All of them have basic agreement, but they don't just walk in lockstep on every issue, every day, every time. So, I feel like that we're doing an extremely good job, or people would not be electing Republicans to so many different offices.
All right.
So I would say that I think we're doing a good job, and we deserve to hold the office if we have.
297-5633 is your number. A question from William, who asks since you ran against Senator Darden now Lieutenant Governor Darden when he was running for Lieutenant Governor, will you be supporting David Vitter against Jay Darden next year?
Well, I didn't really run against, and actually he was Secretary of State at the time, he wasn't a senator. I ran for the position, and I thought I could do a good job for the position. I thought myself that I would have been the best person to do that. But the people didn't think that. They selected Lieutenant Governor Darden, and I think he's done an excellent job, and at this point in time, we don't really know who all is going to run for governor. And we haven't made any decisions on who I'm going to support and not support. But
well, in that campaign, you said you thought you were more conservative than then Secretary of State Darden.
Correct.
Okay.
I do, and I still do.
All right. Do you think you're more conservative than David Vitter?
Well, I don't think I'm more conservative than David Vitter. Probably not.
So David Vitter is more conservative than Lieutenant Governor Darden.
I'm not going to say that.
Well,
what I'm going to say is they're both.
I think you just did.
Quality people doing an excellent job in the positions they have. So, and you know, you're trying to get me to make a decision on a race that is over a year away, and that we haven't even looked at as a party on who we're going to support and not support. So, I'm telling you, I think they both people that are doing an excellent job in positions they have. I think when you look at the votes that David Vitter has made, I think he's made good votes. And I think if you look at the job Lieutenant Governor Darden's doing as in a Lieutenant Governor's position, I think he's doing an excellent job there. So I think it's too early for me.
But you like
I would support or not support.
You like conservative candidates, though.
Oh, I like good, strong Republican candidates who can win and who can do the job that they're elected to do. So,
well, Stella May just sent me an email, Stella May Stern, I believe, saying, tell Roger he does not represent every Louisianian. He stands for conservative Republicans. That's all. And says, Jim, stop trying to delude the audience. I didn't know I was, but but you're proud of being a conservative Republican, and I got another whimsical email from a listener saying, a Republican who goes to the opera and runs a florist? You're acting like a Democrat, Roger.
I've been in the florist business since 1969. I've owned my own florist, and I've been in the flower business since 1965. I've worked at a florist, and as far as I know, a lot of really strong, good quality Republicans who love to go to the opera and love to support the arts and love to support nonprofit organizations. Matter of fact, most of my friends that support those organizations are Republicans, more so than the Democrats. So I guess we can look and see who gives the most.
Well,
I belong to a number of boards and committees on nonprofits, and I would go toe to toe and say that we support equally or more than any. Democrat or independent.
Yeah, there have been studies. You are correct. Studies showing that Republicans give more to nonprofits than do Democrats. But maybe that's because Republicans like you have more money, Roger.
Well, if we're more successful, then we should be willing to give back to the communities that we serve. And I think that's one of the great things that our party is known for, is that having people that give of their time, their effort, and their money. When you look at individuals and what they donate, I mean, just look at what Mitt Romney donated back to charitable contributions compared to all the
Democrats
put together.
Whether you like his politics or not, Mitt Romney's a pretty nice guy, and he came across as kind of a stiff fellow. But he's really, a quality man. And we'll talk more with Roger Villery about some other matters when we return. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett producing. A few more minutes with Roger Villery, the chair of the Louisiana GOP. And then we'll hear from Bill Dennehy, one of the most colorful major league pitchers of any time. He won one major league game, but had quite a ride, and he's written about his life and times and what happened after his career in the big leagues. Governor Jindal has issued a statement, Roger, about the Hobby Lobby case, saying, with today's Hobby Lobby decision rejecting the arguments of President Obama's administration and affirming rights of families to conduct their business according to their faith, the Supreme Court formally recognized that the overwhelming majority of Americans already know to be true that religious liberty is a good thing. He says, what this decision affirms is that the American belief in freedom of religion still protects the rights of all Americans to live in accordance with their religion, and that these deeply held religious beliefs are more important than the whims and demands of government. Your thoughts about the governor's statement?
I agree with it. I think it's right to the point. We all have the right to religious freedom, and we don't have the right to push those freedom take those freedoms away from any one individual or any group.
Now, a few years ago, the Republican Party, many members, not all, but many, wanted to go after Justice Roberts after he voted to uphold Obamacare. Today, the Republican Party, on the whole, gets a decision in its favor. Does that mean the GOP may seem more warm and fuzzy about the high court?
Well, I think what you have to say is that they agree with this decision of the high court.
All right. Well, what about, finally, what about Landrieu Cassidy, probably in a runoff in December? I think we could probably say that will happen, although you never know. Something strange
could
happen.
You just don't know.
But if that's the eventuality, how do you see that playing out?
Well, we really feel like that plays strongly for the Republican Party, that we'll have the ground organization. We're working extremely hard right now to build a ground organization in the state that's unprecedented in the history of the party. We've opened 10 offices around the state. We've found key people in districts all over the state to help us get out our vote. And we just feel real confident that this is the time that we're going to send Barry Landrieu home. We're going to retire and move forward with new blood in Washington.
Well, thank you, Roger Villery. Always good to talk with you. And certainly this being an election year, we'll be calling on you again.
Absolutely.
Take care, my friend. Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah. 297-5633. We're joined now by William Francis Dennehy, Bill Dennehy, retired professional baseball pitcher and now a noted author. And he has written about his life and times in the major leagues. He only won one game, but he had quite an experience in the big leagues. And the book is Rage, The Legend of Baseball Bill Dennehy. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, and I hear that voice, and many years ago, you were part of the Enterprise Radio Network. I used to listen to you. You were very good. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, I was right out of college. This was like 1981. And I was trying to get a job there, and I was actually talking to some people and thought, you know, I may have a shot, and then boom, you go out of business.
Oh, I know it. What a terrible thing.
But you were the first nationwide radio network for sports, weren't you?
That's right. The Rasmussens, who actually founded ESPN after they sold it to Getty Oil, they decided to do the same thing with a radio network. And so they put this radio network together. And I think they thought they would have an easy sale and turn it over and everything, and they were just underfunded.
Well, you had the pedigree of having been a baseball pitcher and a major league pitcher at that, a guy who, big fella, 6'3", 200 pounds with a good fastball, and you made it to the big show, and you're pitching to Willie Mays early in your career, and what happens?
Well, I got to take you back to the beginning of that game. When we went over the hitters before the game, you know, we went through McCovey and Jim Ray Hart and Tom Haller and everything, and Willie Mays was the last hitter we went over. And obviously, being a 21-year-old rookie, I was a little nervous to pitch to that type of lineup. And Jerry Grody, our catcher, said, the hell with, you know, Willie Mays. First pitch, let's knock him down on his rear end. And, you know, boy, he all of a sudden got my attention. And I didn't have the greatest control back then. I usually just pitched in and out, not, you know, to the spots. And I was saying, oh, my God, what if I hit him? And so anyways, I went to I was pitching against Juan Marichal that night. And when I went to get my warm-up ball from Yogi Berra, he handed it to me, and he said, okay, Lamb, go out there and pitch us a shutout and gain us a tie. We weren't scoring a lot of runs back then. In fact, the team lost 102 ball games. And just before I went through the clubhouse doors, we had a a teammate of mine, who Don Cardwell, good guy, great guy. He said, hey, don't listen to any of this stuff. Take this little pill, and this will add 3 feet to your fastball. They won't touch you tonight. And I didn't think anything of it. I just figured that, he'd been in the big leagues. He'd been a veteran for a long time and everything, so I just took it. Well, walking down the runway in the bowels of the stadium, I could already feel I was getting antsy and nervous and jumpy and so forth. And by the time I started warming up, boy, I did have that extra 3 feet on the fastball. And I went out there. The first inning, after I got the first two guys out, Mays came up to a thunderous ovation, looked down at Grody. He gave me the sign to knock him down. I took a deep breath, and I threw it up and in, and God forbid, I almost hit him right in the head. I wasn't trying to, but I did, and ended up striking him out. In the fourth inning, I struck him out again, but I threw a slider, and by that time, you know, my adrenaline was pumping so much that I probably, my mechanics got a little screwed up and everything, and I jumped out of my my normal mechanics, and I felt almost a stabbing in the back part of my shoulder, like someone almost had knifed me. And that was the last out of the inning. I walked off and went to the dugout, and I said, man, I'm hurt. Something's happened here. I've never had an arm injury before, but boy, something's really wrong. They took me out of the game, and they did the x-rays the next day and everything, and they just came back and they just did the four normal x-rays. They didn't go into, what they could have done back there, which would be x-ray me every half inch all the way around in a half circle. But anyways, I had they called it a strained muscle. They put me on a disabled list. They gave me a shot of cortisone. And after a little stay on the disabled list, I came back and I won my only game in the big leagues. I pitched against the Braves on a Sunday. And that was when they had a pretty good outfield. They had Rico Cardi in left, Felipe Lu in center, and Hank Aaron in right. And some guy by the name of Joe Torre was catching for him at the time. So they had a Felix Mian. They had a pretty good lineup. Everything was fine. 2 days later, we're out in California, and I'm warming up in the first inning to prepare myself for my Friday night start against the Giants. And I'm just trying to get loose. I was a lot stiffer than I had thought, on Monday, maybe with the being so excited for winning the game and everything. And the call came down, that we needed for me to come in and just get out of the first inning. We didn't want to give the Dodgers a big first inning and stuff like this. And I told them I couldn't get loose. And they, called down and, Wes said, well, we need you and you're going in. And, today, if you look at any of the prospects in baseball, nobody, absolutely nobody that's a prospect would pitch on a Sunday and then come back with one day's rest to, pitch in a game 2 days later. And I strained it again that night, strained it or tore it or whatever I did with it. Pitched a little bit more during that month, and then they sent me to Jacksonville where they did a procedure where they actually shot dye into your arm. And if it was a straight line all the way, that means that there was no tear. While they put this straight line in, if it bubbled in a certain spot and everything, that's where the tear was. And they saw the bubble. I saw the bubble. It was on the monitor. They did it in an operating room, but you were not under the influence of any kind of drugs. You weren't knocked out and stuff like this. So basically what they did is they sent me home for the rest of the season and told me, don't pick up a ball, just rest. I came back in September. I said to them, my arm still didn't feel very good. There was a lot of tightness and soreness in there, and I got a couple more injections. And I said, what about that procedure that showed a tear and everything? And they said, well, this should take care of it and everything. And in November of that year, I ended up becoming the first player in Major League history ever traded for a manager. I got the Washington Senators for Gil Hodges. Went to Washington. I told the doctor there immediately that, my shoulder was not feeling good and everything. And he felt around my shoulder and felt some sore spots and everything. He said, "Oh, I think we can take care of this." He says, "This feels like it's the same kind of injury that Billy Kilmer had." Well, if anybody remember Billy Kilmer, you know, he was a great quarterback, but he never had much of a fastball. You know, Sonny Jurgensen was the guy with the great arm there.
Right.
So he injected me with a few more cortisone shots, and I ended up over the next 26 months, including the time with the Mets, getting 57 shots of cortisone. And after a while, I wasn't even getting the Xylocaine, the painkiller, before they injected the shot because, I had so many shots and everything. They didn't want to kill the pain because, they couldn't find where the soreness was still left there. And,
so what did that do long-term, Bill?
Long-term, what it did, Jim, was when I got out of baseball, I was out of baseball at 26. I left baseball with still a sore arm. It moved up into my neck, had neck problems and everything. Well, okay, I'm out of baseball. I'm not pitching anymore, but what do I do with the pain, the physical pain and everything? You know, when I went to any local doctors back home, you know, they said, "Hey, we're not giving you any more cortisone." I don't know why they gave you as much as they did in the first place. So I started looking for over-the-counter stuff, and when that didn't work, I started looking for some street stuff, anything to kill the physical pain. And then I also got to a point where with that much cortisone, what people don't realize is that cortisone is a cortical steroid. And I believe that I also started to get cortisone or steroid rage. You know, there was several fights that I was in, not only in baseball before I left with the Tigers, but also when I got out of baseball. I was quick-tempered. I was easy to fight and everything. And basically over the next 20 years, I was just trying to medicate myself with anything to stop both the physical and emotional pain. The emotional pain of not reaching my potential and being lied to and not having to been disclosed to me that I had a complete tear in my shoulder. And the physical pain where I had the tear in the shoulder and it just felt like I had a toothache every day when I woke up.
Well, and now you have problems that go beyond a sore arm.
Well, fortunately for me, in 1992, after 20 years of medicating myself and, you know, bouncing around from job to job and losing jobs and so forth, a friend of mine got me an appointment at a rehab center, and I went in and I talked to those people. I had actually met with my my two daughters. I went up. I live in Orlando, Florida, and I went up to Connecticut, where we're from. And I was divorced at the time, and I spent 2 weeks up there, but not 2 weeks quality time at all with my kids. You know, I was out there drinking and drugging with my buddies, and you know, I'd go to a game, but I'd stand behind the center field fence, you know, where I could have a beer and, you know, and smoke a joint or something like that. And finally, my youngest daughter said to me, you know, "Hey, Dad, you know, next time we get together, you know, you think you could spare 15 minutes of your time just to play catch?" And boy, that was what was the turnaround for me. You know, if I, as a former major leaguer, couldn't spend 15 minutes with my daughter to play catch, then my life really had gone down the tubes. So I went in and, into rehab, and June 15th of this year, I have got 22 consecutive years without a drink or a drug, and my life, and especially my relationship with my kids, has really turned around, and I'm living a better life.
The book is Rage, The Legend of Baseball, Bill Dennehy. Now, you've had sight problems. Is that related to the cortisone?
We think so. Back in 2005, I woke up one morning, January 17th, 2005, and I couldn't see out of my right eye. It was disclosed that I had completely torn retina. There were no signs, no floaters, no liquid in the eye and everything. I was in between jobs at the time, so I didn't have any insurance. So by the time I could find a way through the community to get some insurance to get the eye operated, it wasn't until March 3rd. So I lost the sight of my right eye. My left eye, I ended up having three retina holes, a macular hole. I had cataracts. I've got sight-ending glaucoma right now. When they trace back my family history, no one in my family had any type of eye problems until, you know, they reached the 80s or the 90s.
Well, we got a roll, and I'm sorry because it's a compelling story, but the book is Rage, The Legend of Baseball Bill Dennehy. His rookie card, go for $1,000 now. That's it for today. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.